I'm Tom Hall. We turn now to a conversation about a program coming up next Sunday in College Park that features music from a famous ballet. And as you might expect, there will be people moving on the stage to that ballet music. But what you might not expect is that the ones doing the moving are not dancers, but rather the musicians who are playing the music. In 2012, the MacArthur Award-winning choreographer Liz Lerman teamed up with her friend and colleague, the conductor James Ross at the University of Maryland, for a unique performance of music by Debussy. On Sunday, they'll give a similar treatment to Aaron Copland's music from his ballet, Appalachian Spring. Liz Lerman and James Ross join me on the line from College Park. Good morning to you both.
Hi.
Good morning, Tom.
So, Liz, explain to me how this works.
Well, first of all, it's pretty spectacular. It's a vision of Jim's, and he came to me with this idea about getting the musicians to move. And I'm, of course, thrilled because I'm assuming it's going to help the audience feel, see, and experience the music and the art form. Now, how it actually happens is really amazing. First of all, and Jim can tell you more about this, the musicians have to memorize the music, and that is very challenging. And then secondly, we've got to figure out who can move when, what kind of music are they playing that they can actually move their bodies, and then what story do we want to tell while they're moving.
And your process for this, has this been a sort of group effort? Have you designed choreography that you're putting on them the way that sometimes choreographers do to a dance company, or is it more organic?
It's much more organic. In fact, I'm really dependent on the wonderful ideas that the musicians have. So part of the rehearsal process is also giving them the skills to understand that they can make the movement too. I mean, I do also give them movement, but it's a give and take, and Jim also has ideas, and a lot of times we're really looking hard at the score. But, you know, I couldn't do it alone. Vincent Thomas, another Baltimore choreographer, is helping, and he's spectacular because he's really, really good at moving large groups of people around. And then Martha Whitman, a longtime collaborator of mine, is also performing.
And Jim Ross, the last time you all did this, you chose music by Debussy, The Prelude to the Afternoon of a Faun. That's originally a symphonic tone poem that was later actually used by Nijinsky and others for a ballet. Appalachian Spring began, you know, as a ballet, a Martha Graham ballet. Why did you pick this particular piece to do?
I would say this was payback in a way, because when the idea of Debussy Faun came up, Liz was pretty sure she wasn't that interested in it because it was so iconic. Its influence on the whole world of dance kind of affected the whole 20th century. And the idea of like her going on record with this with a bunch of musicians who knew how they were going to look probably just scared her a little bit. But I had this conviction that it was a great first, you know, if only project. The Copland Appalachian Spring, in contrast, is a piece that Liz has loved her whole life, and it just felt like it would be a great gift to her and to all of us to be able to work on this. It's so American and so iconic and seems to awaken something beautiful in everybody who plays it and everybody who hears it. So I think that was the source of our interest.
Yeah, and I was also really interested, Tom, because I do love the music, but, you know, originally it was called Dances for Martha, or maybe even Ballet for Martha. It didn't become Appalachian Spring until the last moment, and I wanted Martha Whitman to be dancing with the orchestra, so it literally is a dance for Martha.
And Liz, in your book, you wrote a terrific book called Hiking the Horizontal, and you talk a lot about your use of non-traditional dancers with your company, The Dance Exchange, and in other places. The fact that they are playing instruments is one thing, but none of these students, I imagine, have much training in dance. And how has that informed the development of this piece?
Well, there are actually some among them who have danced, which is magnificent, and some of the guys have done gymnastics and things like that, so they bring that movement forward. But, you know, musicians do move. In fact, musicians move a lot. And I think part of the discovery of this has been to take that kind of intuitive movement that's part of the way they may just weave when they're playing and make something of that and get them to see how wonderful it is to actually engage their whole bodies the whole time. And I think that's also one of the challenges, because even though they may have a rest or they're not playing in this particular passage, we are demanding that they are present and fully engaged for the entire length of the piece, which is pretty beautiful to watch them step up to.
Liz Lerman is an internationally acclaimed choreographer. James Ross is the director of orchestral activity at the University of Maryland. They'll be teaming up for a concert Sunday that promises to be a moving experience, not only for the folks in the audience, but for the folks on the stage. On 88.1, it's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. So, Jim, I'm interested in a couple of things. Number one, your role as a conductor, and number two, the challenges that the players are facing in a piece that's as rhythmically complex as Appalachian Spring. Here's an example. So we hear lots of mixed meters and stuff. How do people stay together if they're moving around and their faces are, you know, sometimes upstage or facing across the stage and they can't see you?
Well, there's this great dirty secret in conducting, which is actually the more we conduct and lead, the less the ears of the players are actually reliant on themselves. And when we started facing the Debussy as the first challenge in this regard, we had one of my conducting students plan to be involved who had actually performed the piece before. But as the work evolved, it became so clear that they could play it more embodied, more beautifully, if they didn't have to follow anybody else. So part of the challenge here is not only that they've memorized the piece, that there are no chairs or barely any music stands on stage, they're not looking at the music, and they're moving while they're playing by memory, and we've also taken out the conductor component. So it's beautiful. My job is as a musical shaper, but without being a musical participant.
Okay, so you will not be on the stage then. I mean, they're on their own here.
They are on their own, and the movement needed to be designed in such a way that they could actually help keep themselves together and that the conductorless performance could be successful, which is vastly more challenging in this Copland than it was in the Debussy, I have to say.
But it also, you can see how that helps the choreography or gives parameters to the choreography, so we can turn to them and say, look, if this is a passage you need to see somebody, please let me know and we'll make sure that you can. But I think one of the spectacular outcomes of this, separate from how emotional it's going to be, I think for audiences, is that they get to hear the music so differently because they're standing in different relationships to each other. They're playing, you know, it's not just the violins in one corner and then the flutes over in another corner, you know, it's constantly mixing up. And so the way it all sounds back to them is very different.
And I would say one of the great discoveries of the very first time we did Debussy was we had microphones hung over the stage. It did not matter where we put the people on stage. Their musicianship and their sense of the piece constantly shifted so that the microphone heard a beautiful performance that you would not believe was people moving around.
Yeah, that's great. Now, what has their reaction been? I mean, obviously you're taking these young artists way out of their comfort zone. They're used to sitting in a chair with a music stand, playing from the music and watching a conductor. You're blowing all of that up. What's their reaction been, Jim?
The first time there was, I would say, more pushback, if you want to call that, or just discomfort. Like, people didn't know where we were going, where we were going to end up. And frankly, we didn't either. I mean, felt like we were entering a new world. There's the world of the marching band, but the world of the moving orchestra with that kind of sensitivity just hadn't been tested before or experimented with in any way. Because of the success of the Debussy, I would say that everybody who's at school now knows that things like this have happened at Maryland before, and many of them actively wanted to participate in this. So this year it's been a wonderfully smooth ride and a very participatory experience with them wanting to make this a great event, and actually almost zero pushback, or only pushback for good reasons.
Yeah, and they and one of the women who plays the cello, for example, has devised a completely different kind of harness. So the cellists are all wearing their cellos based on her design. And wait till you see what they do.
So I was wondering about that. So, I mean, people who normally play their instruments seated, you know, they are going to be moving around. I'm thinking of that Woody Allen movie with the cellist who's in the marching band, you know, who runs up 20 yards and sits down and plays a few bars and then runs up another 20 yards. But they are all actually, and the contrabass players, they're hauling those things around the stage too.
Yep.
Very movable. One of them is a great gymnast, and so he treats his double bass like a gymnastics partner.
That sounds like fun. Liz Lerman, what did you learn from the last time? What's different about this time than when you did Debussy a couple years ago?
Well, a lot of things have changed for me. One is actually not just the enthusiasm, but the ideas that the musicians are coming up with is really great. I'm relearning the. I can read music, but I can't read a score, and so I continue to be extremely reliant on my collaborator Jim and now Vincent as well, in the sense of understanding where the freedom lies, because there are many, many more bodies on stage than there were for Debussy, and it's much longer. But I think one of the things that's just been not a surprise, but I guess an ongoing inspiration for me is that the seeing them move and the kind of story that we're telling with it turns out to be highly emotional. And for me, Appalachian Spring, the music, is coming alive in the way that I think I've always wanted it to be. And as much as I love Martha Graham, this was not one of my favorite pieces of hers. It was too spare, too sparse. And somehow the richness of this is, I think, going to surprise people, and it's quite lovely.
And Jim, the evolution of professional conservatory training for young musicians has been quite dramatic in the last generation or so. You teach not only at College Park but also at Juilliard up in New York. How does this fit into, you know, your approach to training young musicians who will, you know, putatively go out to audition for symphony orchestras around the country?
I really think young classical musicians today can't afford to simply expect that there's a world that they're just going to fit right into, that will be given to them, that has an audience, that has a livelihood given to them. I think that everybody understands now that entrepreneurship of a certain kind and a creativity to make their own lives vital in classical music is just part of what they have to figure out. I know that there are a bunch of schools thinking this way, and certainly we think this way at Maryland as well. It's a kind of a requirement for 21st century classical musicians. What kind of life in music and in an orchestra would you like to be participating in 20 or 30 or 40 years from now? So we're trying to plant the seeds now and actually just guess like what those concert experiences will be like, and see if we can have a kind of joy and enthusiasm in the orchestral setting be part of their own requirement for themselves, that it embodies their ideals for the future.
Well, Liz Lerman and Jim Ross, thanks so much for your time. And as we say, even in the dance world, break a leg on Sunday afternoon.
Thanks, Tom. We'll great to best. Talk to you.
All right, great to talk to you both. James Ross will conduct the University of Maryland Symphony Orchestra in a performance of the suite from Aaron Copland's Appalachian Spring. The players in the orchestra will perform the music with movement that they've developed under the guidance of choreographer Liz Lerman, along with Vincent Thomas and Martha Whitman. They'll also play music by De Tillieu and George Gershwin. The concert is Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock in the Deckelbaum Concert Hall at the Clarice Smith Performing Arts Center on the campus of the University of Maryland in College Park. We've got a link to more information on our website, wipr.org/Maryland Morning. Coming up tomorrow, a conversation with two great local actors who are in a terrific production at the Everyman Theater called By the Way, Meet Vera Stark. Dawn Ursula and Beth Hilton join me to talk about this provocative play tomorrow morning on Maryland Morning. Until then, for producers Stephanie Hughes, Matt Purdy, and Jamila Kay, for our production assistants Cassandra Morales and Justina Latimer, and for Sheila and Nathan, I'm Tom Hall. Thanks so much for being with us. Have a great day. Thank you.